Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is Dr. Neil McLaren. He is here for his second visit to the program. He has just released his new book, Humanizing Psychiatry, The Biocognitive Model. Dr. Neil McLaren, who is always known as Jock, is an Australian psychiatrist living in Darwin. It's in a remote northern part of the country. He was born in a small town in Western Australia and trained in medicine at the University of Western Australia in Perth. Jock began to train as a surgeon, but a chance placement in psychiatry convinced him that this was the field he had always wanted. He graduated in psychiatry in 1977 and first worked in prisons, then taught in Thailand for a year. On returning to Australia, Jock commenced a PhD jointly in psychiatry and philosophy before moving to far north of Western Australia to work with the Aboriginal people. And he's now completed two monographs on the scientific status of psychiatry, developing a rational mentalist theory which is totally opposed to the biological model which dominates modern psychiatry. Jock lives in the bush outside of Darwin with his family and makes occasional trips to the U.S. to lecture on his work. And you can find out more at his website, futurepsychiatry.com. So welcome back to the program, Doc.
Yes, good morning, and thank you very much, Juanita.
Good morning. So please tell us what time it is in Australia.
Well, in Darwin now, it's just 5:45 a.m., and I look outside my window, and the eastern sky is just getting a little bit gray. It's hot. It's been very hot. We had some torrential rain yesterday with the first of the monsoon and a wild storm that blew trees down everywhere. So it's quite an exciting time of year in Darwin.
You're having some rough weather, though.
The beginning of the monsoon can be pretty rough as the first of the rain comes in from the north.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds beautiful.
It is. It's the most exciting time of year. Everything suddenly goes green. All of the birds that fly down from Asia are now arriving, and the bush is just transformed overnight.
Oh, that's great. So we're not going to see you. I know you just made a trip to the United States, but no plans of moving to the U.S.? I mean, it sounds like you really like your native Australia.
I like it here, but really I've reached the end of the road as far as the development of my work goes, and I do actually have to come to a much bigger centre. Mm. And I've just got back from the US about a month ago after a very busy trip, and I'm still looking at it, but there are huge problems in the way, one of which, of course, is that most of the universities are struggling financially and they really can't afford to take on anybody else. Mm. And the second one, of course, is that I have got to pass the basic US medical licensing exam, and at my age that's a little bit difficult. It's a long time since I did any pediatrics or obstetrics.
Oh, I see. Well, how are you and your work being accepted here in the US? I mean, it's pretty radical and revolutionary what you're putting forth in the whole psychiatry field.
It is radical, but it differs from previous books that have been called radical because it is coming from a different position. I start from the point of view of a philosopher and look at the whole of the field of psychiatry objectively. When you measure the different theories that are used in psychiatry against the standards of the philosophy of science, it is absolutely clear that every one of them fails the most basic tests. Now, that means that psychiatry has no scientific basis. And then I've proceeded from there to develop a rational humanist model of mental disorder, which is completely different from the biological model. Now, that is not well accepted by the mainstream of psychiatry, and there's a lot of reasons for this. For example, the sociological reason, simple sociological reason, is that every influential psychiatrist in the US today has devoted his career to this biological model, and he isn't going to respond very well when probably one of the world's most isolated psychiatrists comes along and says, what you're doing has no rational basis. It isn't science.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, there is, I'm quite sure now, in younger psychiatrists, trainees and medical students, there is a real intellectual hunger for something better than biological psychiatry. So there's quite a lot of interest. There's really quite passionate interest, but it's patchy.
It's patchy. Do you see that the model that has been in effect, obviously, for many years here is starting to really fail the psychiatrists?
It's not so much failing the psychiatrists, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but it is manifestly failing the people for whom it's intended. That's the general public
mm-hmm.
and mentally ill people. In real truth, there's been no change in the last 35 or 40 years, 35 years, say, in the way psychiatry manages mentally ill people. There's been no change at all. I was just in a major psychiatric center in Detroit, and Detroit, of course, has its problems, but that doesn't matter, because what I saw in that psychiatric center was really psychiatry as it was practiced in Australia in 1974 when I first started. I was really quite shocked. I was not expecting that at all. And it was manifestly failing.
Mm.
Manifestly failing, I mean, for the most simple reason that it was costing them about $1,100 per patient visit. And I just couldn't believe that. This is where the money's going.
Mm-hmm. Wasted money. Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, why don't you briefly explain the difference for our audience today between psychiatry and psychology?
Yes. Psychiatry is a medical specialty. You have to graduate in medicine, and then you'll normally work 1 or 2 or 3 years, preferably the more the better, in the general hospitals or maybe even in general practice. Then you move into a training program at one of the big centres, and you've got another 4 years, I think it is in the US, but 5 years in Australia, to complete a program of training and supervision in psychiatry before you graduate. You're then registered as a medical specialist. You have the same status as other medical specialists, of course, and you're free to practice anywhere you like. Now, that's psychiatry. Psychology is completely different. It is a university field. It was developed out of theoretical works. It originally arose from the field of philosophy and specialized out of that. And then it is very, very much always, it's always had a strong academic bias. It's a strong research interest in it, whereas psychiatry is a very practical matter of dealing with mentally ill people as they come through the doors. So psychology has always had a much more contemplative feel to it, very academic, abstract, even abstruse feel, which is quite different. Of course, the psychology is applied, but that's actually then turning back from what psychology was originally. Mm. It turns back to the practicalities.
Now, you had most of your training in psychiatry, but would you say that you also have had training in psychology and would be considered a psychologist?
No, I'm not a psychologist. I could actually register if I wished,
mm-hmm.
but as it happens, I am not a psychologist.
You
have to undertake an approved training course
mm-hmm.
again,
mm-hmm.
and that normally is a 4-year degree at a university, and if you then want to practice as a clinical psychologist, you'd have a 2-year course on top of that.
Okay.
To graduate as a clinical psychologist.
So what does a day in the life of a psychiatrist look like, and for you being in remote Australia?
Well, I'm working now in a town of about 120,000 people, which is
quite
a large military base smack in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit in my office and see patients referred by general practitioners. I do a lot of military, well, pretty well all the military psychiatry in Darwin, so I'm seeing members of the military and veterans, and I have a big proportion of my work is medico-legal, so I'm seeing people for court reports and occasionally treating people under court orders, but not much of that. A lot of it is seeing people for the court reports and insurance reports, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so tell us now then what led to putting out your second book, and maybe we need to just talk a little bit about your first book, Humanizing Madness, and then how that kind of evolved into your new one, Humanizing Psychiatry.
The two books are actually quite similar in many respects. Each one of them has got three sections. The first section looks at the current models. Now, in the first book, it was much more general. I looked at each of the seven or eight models that's used in psychiatry today and compared them with the basic principles of the philosophy of science and concluded that not one of them was rational and could not be developed into a scientific model. Then the second section sets out in detail what you could call the design requirements for a theory of mind, and in order to do that, I started off with the prevailing models used in the philosophy of mind. Then the third section applied that model to psychiatry, showing how it was directly relevant, how it predicted conclusions which biological psychiatry couldn't, and how in fact it provided a very, very much more economical form of treatment, which is human-based rather than biologically based. So the second book extends that. There's much more detail. It fills the model out in a lot more detail and shows how it fits into a lot of other fields within medicine and within science in general, and shows how that this biocognitive model makes predictions about, for example, language, about the theory of personality, theory of mind, of course, but theory of personality is very important. Then it ties in a theory of personality disorder, which biological psychiatry, of course, doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits this biocognitive model into a much, much broader intellectual arena where I show how all the different fields that have fed into it and then the predictions that it makes. And that's what people like, because it, in particular, the young psychiatry trainees and medical students in the US were very happy with that, because it fitted in with a whole lot of other fields that they've studied and made a lot more sense. Unfortunately, biological psychiatry stands out on a rock by itself. It doesn't actually mesh in with any other field of human endeavor, except biology, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a huge distinction. So you really were targeting professionals in the field for your books.
The books are written so that anybody with essentially a tertiary level education can read them. They are not designed, like a lot of books in psychiatry, they're not designed as an inward-looking work just for the psychiatric audience only. They're appealing to a very much broader constituency, I suppose you could say, targeting anybody with a reasonable education who can read analytically and has an interest in these types of areas. Now, that opens it up right out to anybody, or anybody in psychology, social work, then across into education, criminology, a lot of international affairs. Anybody with an interest in violence has an interest in this sort of work. A very much broader audience.
Okay. I'm interested to hear more about the biocognitive model and maybe in comparison to the biological model, if you can give us an example of a practical application.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In essence, the biological approach to psychiatry doesn't have a model. It consists of the statement, mental disorder is caused by chemical imbalances to the brain. That, in essence, is the model. Now, of course, that's not a model, not in any scientific sense or rational sense. That's just what is called an ontological statement. That states your belief about the nature of mental disorder. Now, that commits them to looking for unusual changes in the brains of mentally disordered people. Immediately there's a lot of problems because you can't look at them in any detail and we don't know enough about normality to be able to say what abnormality is. Then you move into the much more difficult field, which is that if mental disorder is not a brain disorder, how would the biological model know? It could never tell.
That's
you
true.
See.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've only got, for example, a stethoscope to listen to somebody's head, but the problem with his head isn't making any noises, then you will never know whether there's anything wrong in his head. And that's the essential example of the problems of biological psychiatry. It is a very, very restricted approach. It doesn't allow the possibility that there may be psychological causes of mental disorder. So, for example, if somebody has had seriously traumatic incidents as childhood and these have produced a lasting post-traumatic state, then the biological model can't tell that. All it can do is search for abnormalities. But if the person doesn't have any abnormalities, if, for example, he's only learned that the world is a cruel place and you can't trust human beings, then the biological model will show no abnormalities. So this is the problem with it. Now, my model is totally different. It starts with a resolution of the mind-body problem. It shows how information coded into the brain can affect the genome and vice versa, and then proceeds from there. So now we've got a direct entry point into the biological status of the brain from the informational state of the mind. And what it says is that the mind controls the brain. That is the exact opposite of what biological psychiatry says. Biological psychiatry says that in mental disorder, the brain controls the mind and there is no psychological disorder. And I think that that is just patently rubbish. But every point, you can't just appeal to people like that. You can't say, well, I think this is patently rubbish and expect them to follow you. You have to go through every point step by step, nailing it down tediously, minutely, and till there are no... there's no wriggle room left. There are no points at which they could say, oh, yes, but. So this is why it's such tedious work.
It does sound tedious. And how do you make that a kind of a scientific distinction when some of what you're talking about with the biocognitive model isn't necessarily a direct science?
No, and that's a very important point. But you have to start with the general conditions of what can a mind do. If what is a mind, how could it arise, and how can the brain and the mind be related? And that's where I've started, you see. I come from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Biological psychiatry comes from the other side. They come from the view, here is a brain, this is all we've got, therefore our science must be based on whatever we can touch and see and measure and probe. It doesn't take into account the informational content of the brain as a mind, and that's the difference.
That's the big distinction. Is there a place for medication in your model?
Yes, there is, because the model predicts, and this is a clear-cut prediction, it predicts that the informational state of the mind can generate states that are very destructive to the individual. So, for example, if a person genuinely believes that frogs are dangerous, then eventually that belief will come to control their lives, especially in a town like Darwin where there's lots and lots of frogs. So that's a big phobia here. A lot of people are scared of frogs.
Really?
And quite often they will get trapped in their houses and they can't go out.
Oh, my.
Now, if you had the ultimate brain scanner and the brain probe, and you probed every neuron in their brains, you would find that there is absolutely nothing wrong with their brains. Nothing whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They are perfectly normal, healthy brains. They are simply programmed wrongly. And that's the essential difference between the two approaches.
Do you think that people are often misdiagnosed with the biological model?
Do I? This could get me into trouble with my colleagues, but the answer is yes, I most certainly do. I spend so much time taking people off medication that they don't need, medication that they should never have been put on, or correcting problems that should have been recognized in a 5, 10, 20 years before and dealt with quickly, but they were not dealt with. They were put on drugs, then the problem was suppressed and allowed to keep festering, and then everything breaks down and the person is in that much worse state. Time and time again, I have people coming in, because we have quite a high transient population here with the military and various other industrial emphases that we've got in this town. And so I see a lot of people who've been treated down south in the major centres, and these are very often major internationally recognised centres. And they come in and they'll sit down and I just take the standard history, and they say, well, nobody's ever taken a history like that before. Nobody ever asked me those questions. Nobody ever asked what I thought of school, for example. And then out of that comes a different approach. And I say to them, well, I am not jamming this down your throat. You've heard me take the history. You've heard your answers. You can see how you've been treated. You must now make a decision. And it is extremely rare that anybody will say, no, I'll stick with the drugs.
Absolutely, because they're getting better. And with the drugs, they're not. Just a band-aid,
well,
really.
This is true. The drugs simply suppress the problem.
Yeah.
They don't allow anybody to address the problem and to clarify it and then rectify it.
So I
had a lady in yesterday who's been treated as having a recurrent schizophrenic-type disorder, and she's now in her early 50s, and it is absolutely crystal clear that she is a very seriously anxious person, and she has been all along, all her life. She was a shy and nervous child at school. Her family life was very, very unsettled, and she jumped into an early marriage, which was extremely unfavourable, and then left that seriously traumatised, and then had another marriage which hasn't been as supportive as she could ask. I mean, he's not a bad man. He's just a very strong, outgoing, tough man, and he doesn't recognize that she's an anxious person because she won't tell him. She's been told she's got this schizophrenic tendency. So this is going to take quite some time to rectify, to sort it out and rectify, because her whole life now has been built around the idea that she's mentally ill and she needs a strong man to take care of her. But of course she secretly resents being treated as a brain-damaged individual, and she's got every reason to. She's a very, very intelligent woman.
That is incredibly destructive to get a misdiagnosis like that. I mean,
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Dr. Neil McLaren. He has just published his second book, Humanizing Psychiatry, The Biocognitive Model, which is out now on Future Psychiatry Press. And you can find out more about Dr. Neil McLaren at his website, futurepsychiatry.com. I wonder if you have any thoughts on percentages of people that are being treated under the biological model of psychiatry that you feel are really kind of falling through the cracks.
That would require a huge, large-scale survey,
study,
and that's what I would have to leave Australia to do. But the indications are that a very, very substantial proportion of people are being misdiagnosed. You need to remember that diagnostic labels have fads. They come and go. And at the moment, the fad in childhood is changing from everybody being ADD and ADHD. Now everybody is Asperger's and Autism Spectrum Disorder, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So that one fad is one wave of fashion is receding and another one is coming in. In adulthood, of course, now bipolar is all the rage. So everybody's bipolar. And so everybody gets put on 3, 4, 5 powerful neuroactive chemicals,
mm-hmm.
and they are left on these for life. Whereas, in fact, people have got problems that have to be addressed, but they are not addressed. They are simply suppressed, and the person has to take these tablets, and they go along and they'll see somebody for 20 minutes, and they said, fine, take these tablets and come back in a month, and nothing gets addressed, nothing gets fixed.
What is your thought on the whole pharmaceutical industry and really how it has taken the reins over on psychology and really the Western medical model in general, and how is that playing out in Australia?
Australia is a very small player. We don't actually have an independent psychiatric drug industry. A very, very small player. We are active in certain other fields and, you know, doing quite well in those fields, but they're much more basic biological sciences, which we can do ourselves. But neurophysiology is a very, very highly specialised area, and there's one neurophysiologist in Australia that I'm aware of, you know, genuinely high-level neurophysiologist, but he's not a medical practitioner. So we don't actually have a psychiatric drug industry here. But in the US, of course, there's major problems. And you will be aware of the scandals that have been surrounding psychiatry over the last 2 years or so, how eminent professors of psychiatry at major prestigious universities have essentially been selling their results to the highest bidder. I'm not going to mention any names, but you can Google them anytime you like. And this is doing enormous damage to psychiatry. It's just dragging our name in the mud. And I think that flows directly from the fact that psychiatry doesn't have a formal model of mental disorder. We've got this statement that mental disease is brain disease, but that is not a scientific program. And as a result of that lack of scientific program, this scandalous behavior erupts periodically. And in fact, I predicted this 12 years ago. This is exactly what I predicted in a small paper I published 12 years ago.
What were you seeing that led you to that conclusion?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
What were you seeing that led you to that conclusion 12 years ago?
That was when I was coming to the rather scary conclusion that psychiatry isn't a science. And I said one of the problems with this is that if it's not a science, there's no way you can restrict the activities of anybody in the field. Because they can say, well, what I'm doing is scientific as much as what you're doing is scientific, and there's no objection to that. You see, there's no potential objection.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that the only way we will actually know what people are up to is when the police come banging on the door. And I said, we're going to have to sit and wait for the next scandal to erupt. And, of course, that scandal has erupted in the US, and particularly that related to people essentially doctoring the research relating to ADHD drugs. And I've always said all along, ADD, ADHD is the next major psychiatric scandal brewing. It's coming because a whole generation of kids now, they're young adults, and they've got problems that have never been addressed. They've been treated as mentally ill. They've been mocked in the playgrounds. They've been taught that for every one of life's little problems, there's a tablet. And they're finding that their careers are blocked. For example, they can't join the military. A lot of them can't get into the police, things like that. And there's a great deal of resentment starting to build up. People have been, and still are, put on these drugs for essentially no valid reason other than that their behaviour is 1% outside the very narrow limits that are set these days.
Mm-hmm. And that's for ADD and ADHD.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of resentment. It's building up, and it will come. It's absurd. You can't have 30% of the boys in a classroom taking drugs for a genetically determined brain disease. That is an absolute absurdity, and that's the scandal of psychiatry these days, because it doesn't have a model of mental disorder which would say this is absurd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the other area that concerns me is the way people are just being told, oh, you're bipolar. This is particularly the case with women who present with signs of longer-term distress are much more likely to be labelled bipolar and put on large doses of powerful psychoactive medication in the long term, while men who present with essentially the same symptoms will be given the label of adult ADD or adult ADHD and put on other psychoactive medication, and then nothing is done to address the long-term problems. And if the people are at all reticent, that is, if they're not very forthcoming, which is extremely common where I work because they're country people and they tend not to complain, then nobody will ever explore the mental problems that may well have been present since childhood, certainly early teenage years. They'll just be left there doing the damage underneath while everybody keeps saying, just keep taking your tablets, you'll get better, you'll be all right. This is a major problem.
It is a major problem. And what do you see as long-term effects on a society that isn't addressing underlying issues like that, that are just being prescribed medication, and this could essentially go on generation after generation?
The way you asked that is really very scary, because what we're doing is training people to think that if anything goes wrong in their life, it's nothing that they can do. It's out of their control. It's chemical. They must go and see a specialist who will make some mysterious assessment and then prescribe something that comes out of a bottle. And so the solution to all life's problems is a bottle under the control of a very powerful, distant person. And I don't think that that is a good message to be spreading around at all. And we now, of course, have the spectacle. We're moving into the third generation of people who say, oh, you know, I'm ADD because my father was ADD and his father was ADD. We've checked his military records, for example. I've seen that. Whereas, in fact, the grandfather had a severe post-traumatic state. The father was the son of a person with a severe post-traumatic state and alcoholism. So the father had all the effects of being raised by an alcoholic. And the son is the child who's the patient, is the product of two generations of severe disturbance, which not one bit of which has ever been addressed directly. And the child is told repeatedly, you're just like your father, you know, you're bad, just like him. I don't know what's going to become of you, you're going to go to jail, you're just hopeless. And the teachers at school just echo all of this and reinforce it. A lot of pressure to put children on drugs comes from teachers at school. An intense pressure is put on families. And very few families can resist that. Naturally enough, they want the best for their kids. If a teacher comes along and says quietly, look, we really think there's something seriously wrong with your boy, you better take him to see a pediatrician quickly. What do you think the parents are going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any choice in this matter. They're just put on a production line and their authority as parents is stripped away from them.
And there still is a thought process with most of the population, I think, that they look to authorities in any field for answers and don't really question it.
This is true, but the problem is that psychiatry is relying on the authority of general medicine for its kudos. We don't have any authority of our own. If we stand up in public and say psychiatry doesn't have a model of mental disorder, ordinary citizens are pretty horrified.
Mm-hmm.
So what psychiatry does, and what happened just last week here, was a very senior professor, one of the most senior professors in the country, said publicly that psychiatry has to align itself properly with the general medicine, because that has got the proper scientific basis, and psychiatry these days is building a very powerful scientific basis for our practice. Now, the ordinary citizen doesn't know that what that professor was saying was complete logical rubbish.
Mm-mm.
And the problem for me is I can't get my work published here. When I wrote a letter to the editor saying that what that professor said has no basis in any sort of theory or fact and is essentially just propaganda, of course my letter isn't published.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible. You must get very frustrated with this work.
At times, I suppose I'm well beyond frustration now. I just do it because I believe it's right and I believe it's got to be done. But now I'm starting to get interest from overseas, and that's very encouraging. There is no interest, or practically no interest, in this country, although the books are selling here slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no interest on a professional level. I cannot get slots at conferences to present my work, I cannot get my papers published here. I certainly can't get my books published here. And fortunately, the US is big enough to find my niche over there. So we'll see where that leads.
Well, you are actually getting, though, some very good reviews from medical professionals for this new book.
I haven't been looking for any. I haven't seen any yet, but that's very good. That's very encouraging. There is a growing demand for something better than biological psychiatry. Mm. Young people coming into the field just listen to it and say, this doesn't make any sense. This is not intellectually satisfying.
Yeah. Well, I think that most people are really looking for a more holistic model, and that is what you're presenting.
That's precisely what I'm presenting. It is a genuinely holistic model with the human being as a thinking, sentient creature at the center of the model, and everything flows from that. Then the general population wants this, and of course my work says that mental disorder is a psychological state and that drugs may be used, but they are not the primary or the first line of defense in managing these types of disorders, and they're certainly not the last. The drugs will simply be used to bring a person's mental state to the point where he can function, can begin to look at himself objectively, and then the real work starts. Drugs are only a prelude to psychiatric treatment. They are not the treatment in itself.
Excellent, excellent point. I really want, before our time comes to an end here, Jock, to have you talk a little to autism. You know, you touched on it briefly, that this is the new diagnosis. What are your thoughts on autism and how prevalent it is? I mean, I think the last statistic I heard was one in every 150, every kid, one in 150 is being diagnosed with autism, but I think at this point that actually is even less.
The true autism, the true autistic disorder, lifelong, devastating autistic disorder, is extremely rare. I have never seen an adult, since I practiced psychiatry, that's 35 years, I have never seen a person walk in who, because I'm an adult psychiatrist, so I don't see genuine autism except in the mental hospital. And in that sort of setting. The idea that there can be an epidemic, an explosive epidemic, a doubling every year of the number of people acquiring a diagnosis for a genetic disorder is a logical absurdity. The idea that 2 or 3% of the population have got a disorder which a generation ago was regarded as exceedingly rare, that is just pseudoscience. That's all there is to that. The idea that we can go around with a very, very loose set of labels and suddenly start shepherding people into rooms, filling up rooms in schools with children with this diagnosis, that is not medicine. That's mumbo-jumbo. Mm. And so I'm very, very, very strongly opposed to this. Quite simply, the diagnostic criteria for autistic spectrum disorder and Asperger's disorder are so loose that you could diagnose a ham sandwich with Asperger's.
So what do you think is going on with all of these kids that are displaying a variety of symptoms that are being classified as autistic spectrum disorder?
That takes us out into the sociology of science, the sociology of psychiatry and general sociology itself. Why are people so keen to have their children diagnosed these days? When a generation ago, nobody wanted a diagnosis. They would resent it and they would resist it very, very strongly. And it was often necessary to provide treatment for kids without giving anybody a diagnosis. Now they want it. And one of the reasons, of course, in this country is that there's money for being sick. If you're given a disorder, a diagnosis as a child, then there is federal money goes to the school and to the family for looking after that child. So a very powerful financial incentive is being built into the society to label children deviant, disordered, damaged. And that's worse when you get into the minority population.
Absolutely. Are you seeing that as an issue in Australia as well, as big as it is here in the U.S.?
The problem here is that there is such a powerful movement among some parents, teachers, education authorities, and of course the drug companies, to label children deviant and put them on drugs. There is a huge, powerful constituency because it is motivated by money. And it's not just the parents, of course. The pediatricians make most a very substantial part of their money now from making psychiatric diagnoses, for which, of course, they are not properly trained. And then once they've made the diagnosis and put the child on the drugs, then there's this vast industry of psychologists, social workers, advisors, counsellors, even optometrists and audiologists are getting in on the act now. So children are diagnosed with, central visual processing disorder or something like that, and they're sent off to see an optometrist at public expense. Which is just—it's just absurd because there's actually nothing wrong with the child, in any formal medical sense. These kids do not have a brain disorder. They may have an unhappy family, they may have a bad family, all of those sorts of things. And this is the sociology of institutionalized medicine, where it's driven by money, and this, I believe, is very, very bad—a very, very bad development.
Well, it sounds like really bottom line, it is the dollar that is driving this issue, and not just the issue of autism in kids, but really the whole psychiatric model and biological model in general.
The biological model lends itself to dollars. This is the problem, because if you say that a person has a biological disorder of the brain, then it follows logically that the correct treatment is drugs and other forms of physical management. It follows that the individual himself can't do anything. A specialized person must do it for him, drawing on resources which are arcane, abstruse, and outside the understanding of the ordinary citizen. So you're setting up this sort of almost a priesthood of people who are driven by dollars, because they get paid for the number of people they see and the amount of drugs they prescribe. And so the authority to manage your own life is being taken out of the hands of the general citizens and being placed in the hands of this essentially unaccountable group. And I say unaccountable because if you criticize a psychiatrist, they will just look back at you and smile politely and say, well, excuse me, but we in fact have the correct model, the scientific model of mental disorder, and everything you say is not borne out by the facts. Mm-hmm. Well, that's rubbish. They don't have a scientific model of mental disorder at all. And that's just pseudoscience. So the whole thing is very, very destructive. And really, it's not a good idea to start me on this topic. I'm a bit wound up, especially so early in the morning.
Oh, God, it is early.
But
there.
It is a huge...
Yeah.
And this is why I keep saying, this is our next great scandal.
Yeah.
And it's possible that the next great scandal in psychiatry could kill psychiatry. And that will not benefit the general public at all. What we need is a better psychiatry, not more bad psychiatry.
Good point. Absolutely. Good point. And so where is your place in bringing the good psychiatry to the table?
Several things. Number one is the exceedingly unpopular move of standing up and saying, what you are practicing is not a science and here are the reasons. Now, of course, you run into intense institutional opposition there, and that's why I've got to actually go chasing people who are prepared to listen and who are prepared to start to look into this field independently themselves. So I've got to build up a support network, as it were. Then the second thing, which you must do at the same time, is you must say, not only must you say, what you're doing is no good, but in fact here is a new model which is much better and here are the reasons why it's much better. So you must now take this model home and look at it carefully and come to a rational decision as an educated professional.
It's a big mission.
It is a very big mission, but it's better than... I don't know, it's better than gambling or drinking or something.
Well,
like
and I get the picture too, that knowing what you know, you wouldn't just be able to sit on your laurels. This is something that really drives you. You're very passionate about it, obviously, and it takes a lot of courage to stand up to an establishment that has been in place for such a long time and run so deep.
Yes, one of the reasons I feel I've got to get out of this country is because the establishment here is so bitterly and personally antagonistic. For example, the president of the Royal Australian New Zealand College of Psychiatrists some years ago attempted to have me declared mentally impaired, which of course would mean that I was not able to practice medicine and that I could be expelled from the College of Psychiatrists. Now, his complaint was thoroughly investigated over 8 months by the Medical Board of the Northern Territory, according to their proper procedures, and the conclusion was that there was absolutely no basis to his complaint. He never once explained his actions. He refused to apologise. He would not answer any correspondence from me, and the matter was just left there. And I know they would have another go if they could, so I have to be very, very careful. It really is quite dangerous.
Absolutely. I had no idea, Jock. That's incredible. Well, you definitely are very courageous, and there is a need for you to bring this work to the public, and so thank you so much, and thanks for joining us again today. I mean, this work is very cutting edge, and just appreciate talking with you again.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and I do appreciate your comments and support. That's very kind of you.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. We're going to mention your website again, Jock. It's futurepsychiatry.com, and your books can be purchased through your site. And so was there anything else you wanted to mention about your website or thoughts in closing before we departed?
Yes, the website isn't actually very functional at the moment. I've got to fix that up. We're concentrating on using YouTube now. There is one, if you just search YouTube for McLaren Psychiatry, you should pick up a couple of videos, and we're going to try and put on one video clip each week from now on. I've decided it's no point being polite any longer. Just put the facts as they are, and the general public can decide, because the psychiatric profession itself will continue to hide behind their white coats.
Absolutely. YouTube is changing the world. I think that's a great, great idea that you're on there, so we will check for that. Jock, thank you so much, and I can't wait to talk with you again when you come up with book 3.
Thank you very much.
Take care. All right, listeners, once again, that's been Dr. Neil McLaren, a.k.a. Jock. His new book, Humanizing Psychiatry, The Biocognitive Model, has just been published on Future Psychiatry Press, which is an imprint of Loving Healing Press, and is on shelves now, and Jock's website is futurepsychiatry.com, as well as he mentioned, you can check out his videos on YouTube. So I want to thank you for tuning in to this very insightful, very interesting interview today on Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.